listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly. We're back after the international break, but no Chris Parrott this week. He's away. So joining us for part one, you've got two guests this week, is Adam Somerton. Adam, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Not bad at all, mate. Adam Somerton, of course, commentator for BT Sport, mainly on Serie A. We're going to be talking about Juve against Udinese very shortly. But how you been, Ad? Everything good?
Yeah, good, busy, yeah. It's some good games, so yeah, it's ticking along nicely.
Yeah, it's been a very good season so far. I want to get the trivia teaser out for the week, and then I want to ask you a couple of questions that people have tweeted into us, Adam, for you. The trivia teaser for you this week, at Big Footy Teasers does a Football in Europe special every week, and here's the question. Can you name the four starters from the 1994 World Cup quarterfinal between Italy and Spain that are currently managers of clubs in either Serie A, La Liga, or the Premier League? A couple of names spring to mind. We will reveal the answer at the end. That's a tricky one this week, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, well, Andy Brassel would get it within 2 seconds, probably. But
probably, yeah. Have I been sent the answers? Let me just check. Oh, I've got it. Oh, my God. One of these no one's going to get. God's sake. This is a tough one. Okay. Never mind. Okay, Adam, let's talk about Serie A. We will be discussing Germany later with another BT Sport voice in Archie Rintat. We're going to be talking about Bayern Dortmund and Hertha all dropping points. And we'll do a recap of what's happened in France and Spain over the weekend. Adam, all the talk at the moment is about Mauro Icardi, the Inter Milan captain, because the fans want him to have the captaincy stripped away from him. Can you give us a brief outline on the history of this before we go into what happened at the weekend? Why do they want Icardi to not be captain anymore?
Well, it's all around the publication of his autobiography, which I suppose, can you really write an autobiography at the age of 23? I suppose that's a debate for another day, but he has released one, and it includes a chapter covering what was a row that he had with fans in February of 2015. It followed the final whistle of a 3-1 defeat to Sassuolo, where clearly the fans were unhappy. And that, as I say, has been referenced in his book, and some of the ultras have accused him of lying about elements of the story that he tells, his account of that story, in the book. So there's a disagreement about what actually happened. And also there is a perceived threat as well from Icardi. It says that he would bring 100 criminals from Argentina to kill any fans who decided to try and, you know, have a go at him. You know, it's playground stuff, really, but it's been taken very seriously by the ultras. They're very unhappy about it. They released a statement before the game yesterday, and there was a banner in the crowd which said, "You're not a man, you're not a captain, you're a piece of fill in the blank." So, you know, as I say, tensions are high. There were reports that after the game yesterday that there were supporters turned up at his house. That wasn't confirmed. I know that his wife, Vanda Nara, said that they got back into the house, no problems at all. But, you know, there is a decision to be made as to whether he has done anything wrong here in the club's eyes and whether he decides whether he deserves to be stripped of the captaincy or not.
David J. Levy has tweeted in, say, Adam, can you give a brief overview of what's going on with Icardi? I think you've done just that. Connor asks, is yours gold 04 on Twitter? What now for Icardi? Because, Adam, it's only a couple of weeks since he signed a new deal to 2021 or something like that.
It is. And I guess from the club's perspective, this is clearly a very difficult situation for them. But if Icardi were to leave in January, which, if the current level of tensions continue, is the only logical conclusion, really, it'd be hard to see how it could continue. Although I guess it's a long time until January. On the plus side for the club, although they have a player in a difficult position, they do have a player who's tied down to a contract till 2021, only recently, with a very big buyout clause, and also a player who, as I understand the rules, would not be cup tied for the knockout stages of the Champions League, which again would be attractive to potential, you know, clubs who would make the knockout stages. I know that there was interest in him. We heard many times during the summer from the Premier League, so it's difficult. At the current level of tension, it's hard to see him staying at the club because the fans are that furious, certainly a section of them. But this is a real top-class talent. In my opinion, he's one of the best strikers in the world right now. I think he's absolutely fantastic. But this won't all sit well with Frank de Boer, because Frank de Boer from his Ajax days, as we all know, is a coach who doesn't believe in individuals, if you like. It's all about the collective for him. You know, don't build a team around a player, build a team. So, you know, things, he wouldn't want all the focus on Icardi anyway, especially for negative reasons. So how this is all sitting with Frank de Boer really interests me. And it's a very difficult situation for the club. How they manage it, it's, you know, watching them do that is going to be interesting.
Yeah, Javier Zanetti, who still has a very important role at the football club, says we cannot accept this kind of behaviour from an employee, and he would know as a former captain of the football club. It's been very difficult for De Boer since he took over. I'm not 100% convinced of him as a coach, but I really sympathise, Adam, with the situation he's been in, because he took over right at the start of the season, and with the Europa League and everything, the fixtures have come so thick and fast. Can you sympathise with De Boer's situation with Icardi and the inconsistent form that we're seeing from the Nerazzurri?
Yeah, I do hugely sympathise with De Boer. It's a difficult situation that he's come into. He's a very different man, a very different coach to Mancini. That's going to take time. I think the signings during the summer, I was of the opinion, as were many others, and I remain of the same opinion, that I think they recruited pretty well. I think Candreva was logically one of the things they needed. Banega was certainly one of the things that they needed. For me, it's glaringly obvious that they are struggling in the fullback positions. I don't think that Santon, D'Ambrosio, Nagatomo and Saldi, I don't think that any of them are the solutions on either flank. That, for me, is the weakest areas of the team. So that, you know, that is a problem going forward. That's one that needs to be addressed. But it hasn't all been bad. You know, let's not forget, they have beaten Juventus. They beat Juventus 2-1. So, yeah, so we shouldn't forget that. And I think in terms of the Europa League, I've been critical of the fact that he hasn't been playing full strength teams in the Europa League. But that as well isn't entirely all down to him, because as I understand it, because of rules around FFP, they've had to leave certain players out of the squad entirely. Because of the potential implications around that. So, for example, I think João Mário's not in the squad. There's a few others as well, a few other big names, but there are other big names who are eligible, who he's not been picking. So, you know, that's a mixed bag in terms of the Europa League for me, but it's going to take him time. You know, this is, I think he's got a decent squad, a very decent squad on paper that he was left by Mancini, but it wasn't a team without problems. It's still evolving. And I just hope that he's given the time to do that, because I think that in the long term, he could well be the man to take Inter forward.
Adam, this is brilliant, because I'm commentating on Inter Southampton and you're doing all my research for me. This is absolutely fantastic.
Here to help.
Exactly. Look, with Icardi, you know, I wondered if he was perhaps growing up, and we've had the Maxi Lopez love triangle with him before, and it's not the first controversy involving the striker. Would you want your club, because he missed a penalty then in the 2-1 loss to Cagliari, so it clearly got to him. Would you want Icardi at your club?
That's a really good question.
You know, is he just too too much of a liability, too much of a risk? You know, I don't know.
I think, look, if I look at him as a player, I think he's wonderful. I really do, because last season, Inter were a side under Mancini who, particularly in the first half of the season, were incredibly difficult to beat. They were very solid defensively. They were well organised. But the flip side of that was that they didn't really create chances. And it was very difficult for a centre forwards in that team, playing in a team like that, because they didn't create a great deal for Icardi, but he still scored goals and with quite a degree of regularity as well. A clinical finisher. He doesn't need many chances to score a lot of goals. And there aren't many centre forwards around like that. I've always wondered, look, what would he do in a team that was creating loads of chances for him, where he was, you know, still one of the main men? So I think that when I look at a player as clinical as he is, who's done as well as he has at a club where, as I say, he hasn't always had chances created for him, I think he's a wonderful centre forward. But you're quite right to point out there is the baggage that comes with him. You know, I'm not describing his wife as baggage. That wouldn't be very kind at all. But, you know, she's his agent as well. And we all know about the history, as you've just alluded to there, with Maxi Lopez as well. We saw the lack of them shaking hands before the games. There's always that sort of focus every time he comes up against Maxi Lopez. It's apparently an issue in terms of the national team now as well, that he's not been picked for Argentina. And one of the reasons given for that, all this isn't confirmed, this is just conjecture and rumour. One of the rumours is that apparently some of the people or the players within the Argentina squad don't think too highly of him because of the whole Maxi Lopez incident. Whether that's true or not, you'd have to ask them. I'm not saying that is true. I'm just saying that's what's been reported. So, look, it is a problem. And I think that in giving him the captaincy, they maybe thought that would help him, grow up.
Take a responsibility.
Yeah, personal responsibility. And I think to a degree he has done. But I would really question the wisdom of somebody writing an autobiography at such a young age and including such controversial topics. I don't know why you would do that, particularly when you've just signed a new long-term contract to the club that you're writing some things that could be taken as have been taken badly by some of the supporters. You know, the wisdom from him doing that and those who advise him as well. I mean, he should be able to think for himself, but those who advise him as well, I wonder what their motivation in telling him to release a book with stuff like that in it. It's all a bit of a mess, really, Rob.
Yeah, 100%. From rumours to Donnarumma. Do you like that?
Very good.
Milan with the 3-1 win at Chievo at the weekend. And compared to their City rivals, Adam, Milan are looking pretty handy. Because we've chatted before, on paper, it would appear that Inter's squad is better than AC's.
Yeah, I think that it's really encouraging right now for Milan. That was another good win for them last night. 5 unbeaten now, and they've won 4 of those. And of course, they've got a huge game coming up on Saturday that I'm really looking forward to at San Siro against Juventus. So that's something for us to mark in our diaries and look forward to. But I think you're right to highlight the fact that albeit if we look at the two squads, Inter and Milan on paper, Inter's is better, in my opinion. But Milan are further down the road in terms of being a team. And I think a lot of the credit for that, in my view, has to go to Siniša Mihajlović, who did a lot of good things at Milan. I felt it was very harsh that he left the job. I thought that he'd done enough to stay in it. But look, he gave a debut to Donnarumma. He was part of, he oversaw the signing of Romagnoli, who I think he brought on as well as a player. He found a role in the team for Niang, who has been excellent so far this season, and indeed, before he was involved in that car accident, I think it was in March or April of last season. He was a key player and a reason why Milan looked to be moving forward. I've often wondered if Niang hadn't been in that car accident, whether Mihajlović would still be in the job in actual fact, because I think that he was so important and remains so important to the way that they play. He gives them that balance on the left-hand side and has weighed in with 3 goals and 2 assists this season as well. So I think that, as I say, Milan are further down the road. They're more of a team and encouraging signs for them. You know, Montella's saying that, you know, he feels that they're strong enough to really challenge for a European place. That would be, you know, the minimum really that would be expected of the hierarchy at Milan. And I think it's, you know, they're on the right road. They're a long way from being the finished product. There's still some evolving to do there for that team, but there's good young players in it, Rob. You know, someone like, as I mentioned, Romagnoli, Decilio is still young. Donnarumma, a fine player. We saw Locatelli come in and make his first start of the season yesterday, and I've mentioned Niang as well. So, you know, there's a lot of plus points at Milan right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably some plus points as well for Juventus, who really are establishing themselves at the top of the table, Adam. Now, you commentated for BT Sport on their 2-1 win over Udinese. They did have to come from behind, but Dybala, am I right in thinking it sort of took him a little while to get going in terms of the goals? Because he scored a couple at the weekend, and one was a very nice free kick indeed.
Yeah, it was a beauty, a real picture-perfect free kick. Loved it. And I suppose it has taken him a little while to get going. He scored 2-2 before the international break, but prior to that, he hadn't scored, I don't think, for Juventus this season. So look, he's developing an understanding with Higuain, both at club level and international level as well. He wasn't paired with Higuain from the start at the weekend. He was with Mandzukic, but he's just a wonderful young player. And it looks as though he's very close now to getting a contract that renewal as well, which will include, as you probably would expect, an enormous pay rise. So he's very settled at Juventus. He wants to stay there. He was very dismissive of rumours during the summer that potentially there could be interest from Spain. Barcelona were mentioned, but it looks to me like he's there to stay at Juventus. And Marco Tardelli compared him to Messi at the weekend, and he's just a wonderful young player. And Juventus are looking, you know, a very good bet to go on and claim what would be a record sixth Serie A title in a row.
What was interesting for me during the international break, Adam, was when Italy played Spain, a game that perhaps they were slightly fortunate to get a point in. There was a big mistake from Gigi Buffon, and when I was watching about the highlights of your commentary, the ball for Udinese's goal did squeeze underneath Buffon. He probably should have done better. We're not seeing any kind of major decline, are we, in the great Gigi Buffon?
No, well, there was a great quote from Max Allegri before the game when he was asked about that mistake against Spain. And he said, look, this is blasphemy to even start to criticise. which, you know, we look at his records. I can see where he's coming from there. I think it was said with tongue in cheek, but... yeah, I mean, we can only say what we saw in front of our eyes. And yes, it was a mistake against Spain. And yes, I think it's fair to say it was a mistake as well against Udinese at the weekend. They've come in successive games. I mean, do we draw a conclusion that there is a decline or whether it's just a blip? I guess when you look at his track record, you have to probably come down on the side of the fact that it's probably just a blip. But, you know, time will catch up with Buffon as it catches up with all of us in whatever we do in our lives. So there will come a time that there is a decline with Buffon, but I've seen plenty of other performances from him this season and last that would tell me that isn't the case.
Adam, I think you're only getting better with age. I wouldn't worry about the aging process.
You're too kind.
last one, Ad, because I have to let you go, but Arkadiusz Milik getting injured for Napoli during international duty with the Polo national team, tearing his ACL out for something like 6 months, they reckon. And that's a massive blow for Napoli. They were beaten 3-1 by Roma at the weekend. You know, what are they going to do? I mean, there's been talk of Drogba potentially coming in on an emergency signing. Gabbiadini will probably take the lead role, whether they'd give Dries Mertens a go as a sort of false nine type thing. I mean, what a blow for Napoli in terms of challenging for the title. I think they're 7 off Juve already.
Yeah. Well, it's a blow not just for Napoli as a club. It's a blow for Serie A in terms of its product, in terms of selling a title challenge, because I think that Napoli... Yeah. Yeah, Napoli could well have challenged them because Milik had started absolutely brilliantly at Napoli. It couldn't really have started any better for a player who was replacing what many felt was the irreplaceable in Higuain. Yeah, he was setting Higuain standards of levels of goal scoring, which was remarkable. So for him to get that injury was so unlucky, such a big blow, but not just because of the form that he's been in, Rob, but because when you look beyond Milik at Napoli in terms of centre forwards, that's it. There isn't anybody established at the club as a centre forward. Gabbiadini is not a centre forward. You know, it's a position that he's filled in at. He's been used there by Maurizio Sarri, who, as you know, Rob, we've talked about Sarri before. I'm a massive fan of Sarri. But I think with Gabbiadini, he hasn't utilised him to his best ability. He hasn't found the position in the side for him. And he's continually used him as a backup centre forward, a false number nine, I guess others might call it. And I just don't see it. He isn't a centre forward. He was wonderful at Sampdoria when we saw him cutting in on the left, from the right, sorry, on his left foot. He's got one of the best left foots in the Italian football, in my book, but you've never really seen him in that sort of position for Napoli. So it's a problem. And he started as the centre forward against Roma, didn't do well. He got the hook, I think it was 10 minutes into the second half. And it's a real issue for Sarri. Maybe they can, you know, address it in January by bringing in an out of contract player or someone, as you mentioned, like Drogba, who would be in a mid-season break or an end of season break, wouldn't he, I think, in terms of MLS. So that could be a short-term option. People are mentioning Icardi in putting, you know, those two situations together, whether that could happen, because apparently there were discussions between the two clubs during the summer. So that's another option. But they've left themselves very short indeed in that area. And, you know, that was their first home league defeat since the last game under Rafa Benitez in Naples.
Oh, well,
the
when first, they sort of chucked away that Champions League.
Yeah,
spot.
Yeah, you've remembered that game. Yeah, you've remembered the game. And that was their first home league defeat since then. And I've got to say that for Napoli, it was very, very flat, that performance against Roma. And because they're a team, Rob, that relies so much on their energy and their intensity. And when that drops just a little bit, it's very, very noticeable. And that was the case at the weekend. And you have to put that down in part to the fact that there is that Milik wasn't there, that there isn't that focal point to the attack. And it's a big conundrum that Sarri's got to solve.
Adam, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. What you got on this week? What are you working on?
We've got Champions League and Europa League this week. So I'm doing CSKA Moscow against Monaco, and I've got Salzburg against Nice. And then on Saturday, I've got a Serie A weekend this weekend. So I've got Juventus of Milan on Saturday, and then I have Roma and Palermo on Sunday. So yeah,
good week.
It's a good week. It is a good week. I'm looking forward to it.
Adam, speak again soon. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Will do. It's an absolute pleasure.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Okay, a quick recap of what happened in Spain at the weekend. Sevilla stay third after a 3-2 victory at Leganes. Sami Nasri scoring. He's really impressing in La Liga at the moment. There were big wins for the Madrid clubs. Atletico beat bottom side Granada 7-1. Carrasco got a hat-trick. Gaitán, you may remember, signed from Benfica this summer, got 2. Real Madrid won 6-1 at Betis. Isco got a couple of goals in that one. Ronaldo also on the score sheet. While Barcelona got back to winning ways before facing Manchester City. 4-0 winners over Deportivo. Lionel Messi back from injury, and he scored a second-half goal as well. Let's introduce our second guest, Archie Rintat. Hello, Archie.
Hi, Rob.
We get you on, Archie, to talk about German football mainly, but I wanted to ask you a quick one about France and what's happening there at the moment. PSG is second after a 2-1 win at Nancy, Cavani with a goal. Nice remain top after beating Lyon 2-0, Balotelli missing a penalty. But Toulouse, Archie, what a season they're having. Beat Monaco 3-1, and they've got a very young team.
They do. They do have a very young team. Sorry, I thought there was going to be more there. They do have a very young team, and I think that the evolution of this young team under Pascal Duprat has been remarkable. The way that this side only survived on the final day of last season in Liga and is now really built on their momentum from that great escape in the last few seasons, whether it's most notably in the form of Leicester or even in Germany, if you look at Hertha Berlin as well. These are clubs that have really managed to use the achievement of nearly going down but not going down really quite well. But you look at some of the players in that squad as well. You look at the teenage goalkeeper, Alban Lafont, had an excellent game against PSG the other week. Or if you go forward and you look at the captain, Martin Braithwaite, a man who doesn't really sound like a Danish international footballer. He sounds like somebody you'd find more in an office in England somewhere. But he's a remarkable player and has been doing very well. He's even pledged to donate €1,000 to charity for each goal he scores this season, and he scored another 2 on the weekend. Great club, and yeah, Pascal Duprat is quite the character as well. It was only in September that he was talking about his centre-back Issa Diop in glowing terms, so much so that he was saying that if he had a daughter, then he would want his daughter to marry him. That's how much he is a fan of Issa Diop.
I don't think there's many managers who'd say that about their players.
I'm just trying to think of others who would maybe say such a thing, but I think that Pascal Duprat is unique in that sense. And actually, if any listeners want to know just how unique he is, then they only need to look up the inspiring team talk. Inspiring doesn't really do it justice. Actually, the inspiring team talk he gave before Toulouse's final game of last season, where the players were in tears.
Les supporters, ils vous l'ont montré, qui aiment bien châtient bien. Ils vous ont un peu châtié depuis quelque temps. Ils vous montrent qu'ils vous aiment. Allez, d'accord, c'est pas le plus important. Maintenant, le plus important, c'est ce qu'on va voir ensemble. Parce que là, pour sûr.
That's how emotional it was. It's a very good one to find on YouTube. I will put it out again later.
An absolute treat. That team talk. Archie, let's talk about German football. We asked people to tweet in their questions for you. So you up for a couple of these?
I will answer these questions as best as I can. Yes.
Yeah, you don't really have a choice. So, okay, so here's the first one. Andrew WCPT on Twitter says, what is Archie's recommendation of a Bundesliga team to be on this year's Football Manager?
Well, if you're playing Football Manager and you're becoming Bayern Munich, then to be honest, I don't know why you're playing Football Manager, because that is not the point of that game. So you want a challenge. And if you want a challenge in the Bundesliga, then go take on the challenge of Darmstadt, because you will have...
Oh, Archie, that's too boring.
No, it's not. You have no resources. If you are keeping Darmstadt up in Football Manager, then you are doing a stunning job indeed.
What about Red Bull Leipzig?
Well, see if you can win the title. Leipzig, then if you take on Leipzig, you're effectively taking on an under-23 team. So I think that is a challenge in itself. But to be honest, if you're doing that, then you'd be displacing the wonderful work that Ralf Hasenhüttl is doing. And would you really want to disrupt that, even in a football simulation world? To be honest,
Lovable, isn't he? He's a lovable guy.
He is. He really is. So I'm standing by Darmstadt. I think once you do Darmstadt, you can go have fun with the rest of the league. But that should be your entry point.
From Jamie Garwood, what is your favourite stadium to attend? Went to Cologne a few weeks back. Fantastic atmosphere. It's a stadium. Obviously, you live in Cologne, Archie, so that's somewhere you frequent. And we'll talk about Cologne in a bit. But do you have a favourite stadium to go to?
I think I have two.
Can I guess one?
You can.
Borussia Park, is that one?
Yeah, Borussia Mönchengladbach's home stadium, which everything about that stadium suggests there should not be an atmosphere. It's about 6 miles out on the edge of town. It is just the place where the whole of Mönchengladbach and the whole of the Lower Rhine region, which seems to all pull for Borussia Mönchengladbach, just absolutely pour their heart out into their team. And it is the most amazing place when that stadium is rocking. And over the last year or so, it is rocking, or has been rocking, an awful lot. But the other stadium is indeed Cologne's Rhein-Energie-Stadion, because there's something a little bit different, I guess, to that. It's not quite the arena shape, for example, that Gladbach's Borussia Park is as well. But also, I think that Cologne is a different kind of club. And, well, both, well, obviously, Cologne and Gladbach are arch rivals, but it is really quite something to hear them singing their club hymn before the game. Around 5 minutes before kickoff, they sing what's translated into English, We Stand By You, FC Cologne. And everyone puts their scarves up, a bit like You'll Never Walk Alone. But the best thing is, this is set to a rock-infused Loch Lomond, which is the first time you hear it, you're thinking, oh, is that the song? Right.
It's so good, though.
Where else do you see any team run out a live goat in between 20 cheerleaders before every game?
I'm struggling to think of one.
No stadium elsewhere in Germany offers that, or indeed, I think, in the world. So
flying to Cologne Airport, and you can go see Gladbach and Cologne in the same weekend, right? You're pretty near. You're near to all of that.
If the fixtures play out for you, you could indeed do that.
There you go, Jamie. We have delivered. Archie, you were at Borussia Dortmund on Friday night for their 1-1 draw with Hertha.
That's quite a good atmosphere, Aubameyang, as well, occasionally.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah. it's not bad. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang had a penalty save before scoring a late equaliser. Red cards for both sides. Dortmund dropped points again. I suppose injuries was a big factor ahead of this one for Thomas Tuchel's side, Archie.
Yeah, injuries are still, is indeed still the buzzword. That said, it was surprising not to see Ousmane Dembele start on Friday night, especially given the impact that he had when he did come on, because Borussia Dortmund didn't really look like they were having all that much, or or they simply weren't having all that much success in terms of breaking Hertha down. That is a testament to how strongly organized that Hertha are, and there is a reason why they are up in the upper echelons of the table once again this season. All credit to Pal Dardai for that. But Ousmane Dembele gives this Borussia Dortmund side such a spark, which is so exciting to see, actually, somebody who runs as quickly as he does. And whilst his final ball can sometimes be lacking, it just is able to glide past players with such ease. It's incredible to watch. But you would question, I think, actually more Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the man who's actually been helping Ousmane Dembele to settle in. Because as much as Aubameyang has impressed, or even Aubameyang, as we should say, even if we're going off the song that his brother released last year.
well, that is how he pronounces, isn't it? Aubameyang.
It is. Yeah. He had to wait an hour on Friday night for his first chance, and then three or four came in his direction, and he only converted one. And if you are going to be the striker that makes the difference, then you need to score the chances that he did, particularly the one-on-one and the penalty that he missed. But it was a weird feeling inside the Westfalenstadion, because even when he was stepping up to the penalty, I looked to my right, Michael Stefan Buschko, who's a Dortmund writer for ESPN. We looked at each other and we both said he's going to miss. There was just that feeling. You knew there was something in his body language which wasn't entirely convinced. So I think that there's still progress to be made, even by some of the best players in this side for Dortmund. And I don't know whether they are strong enough at the moment to really challenge Bayern, but I don't think Bayern are going to be as strong as they were last season, for example.
No, I'd agree. They drew 2-2 with Frankfurt at the weekend, and I commentated on that game for the World Feed. Bayern twice led the game. Kimmich scoring again. That's 6 goals in 7 games.
Amazing.
For the young Germany international. I mean, it's just extraordinary form. But, you know, Archie, everyone was talking about this thing about, you know, Pep Guardiola going and the lack of intensity. And intensity is the word. I thought people were perhaps being a bit lazy, but watching Bayern for 90 minutes, it was like, where is that bite? Where is that winning? I don't know. And it seems harsh, doesn't it, to say this about a side that won their opening 8 matches?
It is. But if you've watched those opening 8 matches, as you indeed have, then it is all too apparent. But I think if anything, it speaks more for the work of Pep Guardiola in how well he was preparing his side. And it is quite funny to see the reverse ferret, shall we say, of Bild, for example, the Nationale tabloid in Germany, who throughout the second half of the last season was really questioning in terms of Guardiola. And you see an article on Saturday night, kind of why Bayern really lacking Pep Guardiola at the moment. So kind of people are changing their tune, because they are indeed realizing just how amazing in terms of the grip that a Pep Guardiola side, or the Pep Guardiola's Bayern would have on a game. And the problem is, this season, as much as the likes of Joshua Kimmich have kicked on, the rest of the side just hasn't really evolved. I think that Bayern fans were hoping for some sort of return to some of the football that they played under Jupp Heynckes, where, okay, it wouldn't be quite as disciplined or indeed as rigid as the sheer amount of passing that you see under a Pep Guardiola side. But that said, the way that he prepares his teams in terms of they can play in so many different ways, I think, made it entertaining. But I think they wanted to see this high-tempo attacking football again, but that just hasn't arrived. And I think that people have now scented or got a sniff of Bayern's weakness, and you see that sides like Eintracht Frankfurt, even Hertha Berlin, when they went to the Allianz Arena the other week, even though they got stuffed 3-0, these sides do have a little more confidence when they're playing against Bayern. They know they're not playing against the same side, and I think that they are going to lose a lot more points this season, and I'm still not convinced by Carlo Ancelotti's side just yet. It's gonna really take a while, I think.
Do you think that the other teams are strong enough to really have Bayern concerned about defending their title?
if it had been the Dortmund side that was playing last season, then I would have said yes. But
yeah, sure. Okay.
I think that side was strong enough to compete, but we can see at the moment the rebuilding process that they're going through. And I think that in a way you've just got too many teams below Bayern who are just on quite a similar level at the moment, where they're all kind of taking chunks out of each other, where while when they play Bayern, they're not quite beating
sure.
them, for example.
That's a good point. That brings us on to Cologne, I suppose, in a way.
It does.
And as a Cologne resident, Archie, after their weekend victory and goals from Anthony Modeste again, the city must be buzzing because it's a happy enough place at the best of times.
The city is about to take off into outer space. It is no place does celebrating or indeed having a good time like Cologne does. And now that they've been given extra reason to celebrate is just almost going to push everyone over the edge. It's too much. To be fair, this club and this city has suffered with this club for a good while yet. In the last 20 years, there have been 18 different coaches and 5 relegations. So I think that Cologne fans more than any deserve a bit of a lift. And to be fair, this second place in the table at the moment is a victory for teamwork in the same way that Hertha Berlin almost have gone about their business. That's how Timo Horn, the goalkeeper, and Kölscher Jung, the Cologne boy, was telling me on Saturday afternoon. And I think that the way that Peter Stöger has slowly evolved his side as well in terms of the way that they play. So in the first season they came into the Bundesliga, they played, I would say, ultra defensively at times. Last season, then you saw them kind of kick on a little bit more, but at times you would call them conservative for the most part. But now they're opening up their game even a fraction more. You see them becoming that little bit more offensive. And so far, the results are showing that this slow tactical evolution is paying off. And there is just something really quite shrewd as well about the way they've gone about their business. I think the most shrewd piece of business they've done, Anthony Modeste, without a doubt. Now, Blackburn Rovers fans might remember 9 forgettable appearances of his around 5 years ago. But he's Cologne's second most expensive signing of all time at a modest, you kind of have to say, I wanted to use another word, a modest €4.5 million. That is pocket money, I think, to a lot of Premier League clubs and even to a lot of Bundesliga clubs as well. But he scored 22 goals in 41 games, which is, I think, he's in the form of his career. Cologne aren't the biggest financial power. They don't have the best players even, but the sum of their parts really does come to more. And I think that I still think they're going to struggle to make the top 4, or quite obviously with Borussia Dortmund still to come back as well, along with Leverkusen and Gladbach as well. But I think that they are definitely destined for better times, and they could just nick a Europa League place this season.
Also to talk about, Archie, because Spurs play Leverkusen this week in the Champions League, and I want to ask you, because you've been speaking to Leverkusen's captain, and I'll ask you about that in a moment. But what a win for Bremen, and a notable match winner for them as they got that 2-1 success, a surprising one against Leverkusen at the weekend.
Yes, Usman Mane, a man who not a lot of people had really heard of, I would say, until a few weeks ago when he was promoted from the Werder Bremen second team by the former second team coach of Werder Bremen, Alex Nuri, who made the step up to replace Viktor Skripnik. And he helped to inject a new lease of life into this Bremen team, which was really withering. And Usman Mane as well, his backstory is quite something. 19 years old, he fled Gambia just 2 years ago as a refugee, arrived in Germany, and Saturday night brings his first Bundesliga goal. Not just that, it's a winner against Bayer Leverkusen, one of the biggest sides in the division. So his story, his rise, I think, is going to inspire a lot of people. And it is in this time when to get a little bit political, when we are seeing so many headlines, I would say that probably don't exactly put a spring in your step every day, shall we say. I think that Ousmane Mane's story is one that really is quite encouraging.
Amen. Amen, Archie. so a defeat for Leverkusen, they beat Dortmund yes. before the break. They've been very up and down this season. They take flaky. On Tottenham. Flaky. You spoke to, you've interviewed their captain Lars Bender for BT Sport, an interview which is out this week. Do you sense that there's optimism though in the Leverkusen camp that they can get one over a Tottenham side who are performing very well in England?
I think that they can. That was the, I think, the thing I really garnered from Lars Bender was the respect that there is from Leverkusen for Spurs. But they are, I think, frustrated after their first two Champions League games. Twice they've been ahead, 2-0 against CSKA Moscow and 1-0 against Monaco. And both times they've let their lead slip and drawn the games. They should really be on 6 points. Instead, they're on 2, which puts massive pressure on these 2 games against Tottenham. And you would think, looking at some of these results that Leverkusen have had recently, losing away to Werder Bremen, losing away to Eintracht Frankfurt in the Bundesliga, drawing 0-0 at home with Augsburg, you would think kind of that there's, you know, real problems afoot. But the problem with this Leverkusen side is just consistency. You look at the way that they completely blew Dortmund away the other week. It would be very, very Leverkusen to go and beat Spurs now. They are almost, they are very Spursy in the way that they are, you would say. So,
know what you mean, yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if Leverkusen went and beat Spurs. That game, though, should be fascinating. The two stars of play of both Mauricio Pochettino and Roger Schmidt, they are very similar in the way that they like to really press the hell out of their opposition. So that should be an entertaining game to see how they both approach each other. I know that Roger Schmidt went out and watched their game against Manchester City a few weeks ago and came back to Leverkusen almost kind of raving about how similarly they play to Spurs. So I'm intrigued to see what happens in that game and how that plays out.
Archie, thank you so much for coming on the show. Before we go, it's time to reveal the answer to our football trivia this week. At Bic Footy Teaser asks, could you name the 4 starters from the 1994 World Cup quarterfinals between Italy and Spain that currently manage clubs in either Serie A, La Liga or the Premier League? And I have the answers here. Very tough one this week. Donadoni at Bologna, Conte at Chelsea, Luis Enrique at Barcelona, so you may have got those 3. And if you got Fernandez at Sporting Gijon, well done. Those were the 4 answers. Thank you to Big Footy Tees as well, worth a follow as always. That's all we have time for on Football in Europe. I'm going to force Chris to be back for next Monday when we'll have our latest podcast on European football.
This is Football in Europe.